The 7 AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NavaZoom room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. And Marianne?
Hi, everyone. I'm Marianne. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for everyone for reading. And a big, huge thank you to Bill for being here tonight to share his experience and strength and hope with us. I'm really looking forward to hearing Bill. I met Bill, not met him in person, but I met him when I started to go to the 9:30 I Can't We Can when when we shut down in March of last year. Every time he spoke, there was just something I just would stop and listen, really listen. Quite often took notes. He just has a very interesting background, but the bits and parts that I've heard him share. What really, I guess, struck me was he has so much wisdom and intelligence, but he has a gentleness about him. With that, I give you Bill.
Thank you for that introduction. I don't think much of it's true, but, you know, this is an honest program, so I'll accept everything that she said is actually true. I'm afraid you'll probably judge a little differently. I don't know. My name is Bill, and I am an alcoholic. I'm one of these reluctant alcoholics. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. Both my parents were alcoholics, and I sure didn't want to be like them, and swore I would never, ever be like them. And I knew all along that the problem was the bottles that littered the floors and under the seats and various places. But I became exactly like them, reluctantly. I really did not want to become an alcoholic, and I'll try to explain a little bit about that. There's one problem with staying sober a long time, and I think Mark Twain said it best. He said that the older he got, the better he could remember things, whether they had happened or not. And sometimes I sometimes am confused as to what I know or what I think and what I've heard other speakers say, what I've heard in other meetings, what I've read in the Big Book. You know, it gets all mixed up here in the head. So if I say some things that are kind of strange or odd or unusual, just put it down to the fact that I'm getting old, you know, and all I can do is to tell you what happened with me, what it had been like, and more or less a little bit of what it's like now. I'm not very active anymore, but the best way to explain about what it was like, I think, is to describe my childhood a little bit. Both of my parents were what they themselves identified themselves as something called fruit tramps. I don't know if people still use that term. It's an important distinction that they were not migrant workers, although they migrated up the East Coast of the United States every summer. They definitely were not migrant workers. Migrant workers do stoop labor out in the fields. My parents were fruit tramps. They did stoop labor inside the packing sheds. And the biggest difference is when it rains, there's a world of difference between that. Anyway, they were hardworking people. But we're both of them, by the time I have any memory at all, they were alcoholic. Some of the earliest memories I have are of very unpleasant situations. And I did not want to be like them. I became like them, I think, because I'm a firm believer that there usually is some kind of genetic component to alcoholism. A lot of people say, well, there's no alcoholism in my immediate family. And my first response is, was there in their grandparents? Because I've discovered that a lot of people who are non-drinkers at all under any circumstances are doing it as a response to the way they had grown up. Another thing that I learned is that it's a wise child who knows his own father. And my wife is in the healthcare industry that has access to all sorts of records about human beings. And one of the things that she tells me, when she told me, I really didn't believe it until I thought about it a lot. And it is that maybe as high as 20% of our population misidentifies the parent, the male parent, simply because of, I don't know, alcohol and loose morals. I don't know. They seem to go together. I went to about four different schools early on, entered the ninth grade when the family finally split up. And that's the first time I really can identify with feeling on the outside of everything and not fitting in and not being a part of. It was a discombobulating time, I guess, being, you know, going through puberty at that time. I don't know. But it was a bitch. And the breakup of the family had resulted in there being not enough money really to support two households. And so I lived with my mother and...
You come see the patio, I did. So you did.
And there wasn't much money. Huh? We had no telephone. We had no TV. We didn't have anything, really. And I discovered early on that if I wanted anything like spending money, I had to work for it. And so I was thinking back, and I went to work at the theater. That was one of the few places that if you were younger than 16, you could work. And I remember my first wage was 37 and a half cents an hour. And I did that after school for, you know, on the weekends. And it paid for new clothes. It paid for school supplies and stuff like that that otherwise I wouldn't have had. For the same reason, when I went got into the 12th grade in high school, I entered the vocational track, and that was very handy because I learned several occupations as a high school student. I learned to be an auto parts clerk. I learned about warehouse and stock keeping. For a brief period after high school, I even worked in an industrial assembly line for missile container warheads. And I was a member of the Blacksmith, Boilermakers, Ironship Builders, Forgers, and Helpers Union in Lakeland, Florida. Unfortunately, I only weighed about maybe 145 pounds, 6 foot tall. And as the fellow I was supposed to be helping described it to the boss, I was too light for the work. And that really was true. Literally, I know what that means, trying to handle sheet steel that weighs more than I did and roll it around. You talk about long before OSHA. Goodness. So I left that and decided I wanted an easier, softer way, and I found a job in retailing and eventually became an assistant manager of a retail store that was unfortunately on the decline. I guess maybe that's why they hired me. And seeing the handwriting on the wall, I chose a easier, softer way and decided to go to school. By that time, I had married, and my wife convinced me that we both should become school teachers so that we would have the summers free. And so I did, and it worked out really well. The job I guess I was looking for, I found, because it was inside work and no heavy lifting. That's the best way I can describe it. And for a long time, it was good. I didn't drink a lot early on because we didn't have money. But eventually I discovered that trying to relax in the evenings and get along with other people, it was useful to be a drinker, and I started drinking, and of course, nothing happened. Nothing bad happened to me. And as a consequence, I continued to drink and had a good drinking career for 5 or 10 years, maybe. And then, as we say, I crossed over an invisible line, and alcohol became a way for me to deal with some of the issues that I still had. I had difficulties getting along with other people, especially coworkers. I had difficulties fitting in. I knew something wasn't right. I got fired from one job, not for drinking, but because I was not a good team player. I couldn't keep my mouth shut when I should. All sorts of issues that I've since discovered are just part of me, the me that I am. What did I do? Well, I knew something was wrong, so I tried to do something about it. I thought maybe I wasn't civic-minded enough, so I joined a service club. I thought maybe that would be the answer. It was not. Didn't fit in there either. Didn't get along there either. I thought maybe I needed religion, so I joined a church and got baptized, sang in a choir. That was not it either. Still didn't fit in there, didn't feel right, whatever. And I continued to drink, and eventually, happy chance, I met a fellow who drank like I did, and he had a sailboat. And by that time, my wife and I had decided that because we couldn't make friends with anybody, she was as screwed up and dysfunctional as I was, not an alcoholic, but came out of a household where the father was crazy and all sorts of stuff like that. What happened then was that we had a motor home. This buddy, drinking buddy, had a yacht. Wasn't that big, but it was a yacht down in the Keys. And so for 4 or 5 years, we had some really great times, especially in the summers. But all things happen if you begin to be a serious daily drinker, a regular drinker. I began to understand why my parents drank, for example, and that, in a way, made it more acceptable because, well, I'll just not drink like they did, and I won't go to jail. I'll not drink like they did, and I won't have the DTs. I won't drink like they did, and I'll embarrass myself in front of everybody else, et cetera. Well, some of those things happened with me. I never got a DUI. I never quite got to the DTs. The best, closest I came was I wrecked a car, but it was a single car accident. No arm, no foul. I made it to an emergency room on one occasion, drunk, and dropped a manhole cover on my foot. Smoked dope along with too much Jameson's Irish whiskey one morning, and was taken being on the road to the emergency room, and I finally came out of whatever kind of stupor I was in. In a way, it was kind of pleasant. I went to the other side of the moon and found God and asked him what's it all about and everything like that. And his response was, you just shrugged your shoulders and turned away. And that was my first experience with a real higher power. It's called Panama Red. I didn't try that anymore, I'll tell you. So all of this is creating a little friction in the family. And my wife and I began to have lots of problems, lots of marital problems. And we ended up going to marriage counseling, me to prove to her that I really was able to control and enjoy my drinking, could handle it and all of that. If she would just, you know, pointing the finger at her, the kind of stuff that we all do. And it was kind of unfortunate, I think. I've heard a lot of people talk about going for counseling of one kind or another and getting a bad counselor, incompetent counselor. Let me tell you, Jack, the only thing worse than getting an incompetent counselor is getting a competent counselor, because he does an intake, family intake, family history, talks a little bit about my drinking, blah, 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 blah. And within a very few weeks, he suggests that I probably am alcoholic myself. He pointed out that with two alcoholic parents and a male child, you have about an 87% of becoming alcoholic yourself if you drink. The interesting question is what becomes of people like that if they don't drink for one reason or another. And that raises all sorts of questions in our big book here and there. Anyway, I tried to control and enjoy my drinking for, I guess, about 4 months. I would not drink for a couple of days and then have a little conversation with myself and say, obviously, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. I went 2 days without drinking anything. So what would I do on the third day? Yep. And, of course, sometimes nothing bad would happen. I would get by with it. And then other times, disastrous things would happen. I got to tell you, I guess the best way to describe the problems that began to occur over about a 5-year period before we ended up in marriage counseling, the kind of problems that began to occur had to do a lot with my driving. I mentioned one wreck. The other problem was that with these motorhomes, there's actually four problems with motorhomes. One is that they're longer than automobiles. Two is that they're taller than automobiles. They're also wider than automobiles, and they're a lot heavier than automobiles. You've heard all these stories about people getting their motorhomes stuck in a overpass, you know, thing too low and getting that happened to me. That was in Maine. You hear about people maybe backing into things. Well, that's me. You know, I actually am one of those people. Honestly, this is true. It's true. Getting stuck on the beach with the tide coming in, 3:00 in the morning. I down in St. Augustine wanting to watch the sun come up over the eastern coast. It's terrible. The worst thing, I think, the most embarrassing of all was getting my motorhome sort of harpooned on the roof, edge of the roof of a ranger shack in a park. And let me tell you, when you look in the rearview mirror, if you still have one, haven't busted that off because of the wideness of the things, and you see a ranger coming out and he's putting on his 3-4-pointed hat, he's buckling on his pistol, the only thing you can do, there's only one thing that'll save you at that moment. You turn to the wife and say, quick, honey, the list to read. And there's nothing else that I can say is that it was a disaster. And all of those problems began to compound. Well, the last time I tried to drink alcohol was on January the 19th, 1987. By 10:00 that morning, I had my wife crying. I was pretty well buzzed by 10:00 in the morning. But went down, took a nap, slept some of it off, got up and started drinking again. And that night I decided to go out and drive and seek adventures, just like Don Quixote, you know. This was in Cincinnati, or near Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has a belt loop around it, 275 rather than 285. And I went around and around and around, and somewhere, I went into a blackout. When I came out of that blackout, I was over 100 miles away from home. I was totally alone. There's nobody there to blame. And I have never, ever, before or since, felt so utterly hopeless in my life. I felt like my mind was coming apart, and I didn't know what to do. And a little voice came to me, and it's very curious. A little voice said, Bill, you're acting crazy. This is crazy. It wasn't, I'm acting crazy. It was, Bill, you're acting crazy. This is crazy. And somehow I made it back home. My wife had gone to her first Al-Anon meeting that same night in absolute despair. The next morning she came and where I was sitting and trembling, trying to drink my coffee, put her hands around my face and said, Bill, I know something's wrong. why don't we talk to that marriage counselor again? So we went. That was on a Tuesday morning. I made it to Wednesday evening when we went to see the marriage counseling fella. I said, maybe I better check out that AA. Now, he had mentioned AA before, but I had made the stupid move of asking him, well, what do they do? And he said, they don't drink. And I lost all interest in AA as a possible therapeutic. Tried to control and enjoy my drinking until I couldn't. He whipped out a pamphlet that had the meeting lists on it. We called AA. I went to my first meeting that night. Had to have my wife go with me. I was so afraid. I was a complete mess in that meeting. Didn't understand what the hell was going on. There was a speaker meeting, and the only thing that I could kind of identify with, he talked about being angry all the time. Talked about being angry. After the meeting, you know, I'd gone in my work clothes. I had a suit, you know, tie and everything. I looked really slick, I guess. Drove up in a convertible and had a beautiful blonde wife on my arm. And this fella come up to me. He says, you know, what's going on? What is the? I don't know. I said, I don't know. I don't think I'm an alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. And he said, do you have anything to read? And I said, no. And he whipped out a pamphlet, The Merry-Go-Round, named Denial. Another young man came up about half my age and says, what's going on? You know, are you? And I said, no, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. He said, well, why don't you try some controlled drinking? And I didn't want to tell him that I'd already tried that. So anyway, the interesting thing is on the third day, Thursday, I didn't drink. Then on Friday, I had that little handbook. So went to another AA meeting, and there I heard a line that I still remember and very often will cite. The speaker, who was not even half my age, said that he had a faulty capacitor. That's the reason he kept all of these meetings. And he tapped his head. He says, I can't remember if I don't come to these meetings on a regular basis. And having been an auto parts clerk, I knew what a capacitor was. It's a storage device for electricity. Sort of think of it as a zip drive or a hard drive even, you know. No. So anyway, what did I do? I went to a couple of more meetings, and I figured out either I'm an alcoholic or all of you people have made a hell of a mistake. Because in AA, you're not supposed to drink. And I saw people happy and laughing, and I couldn't understand it. But I heard enough in four meetings that recognized, you know, either I'm an alcoholic or all of you people are screwy. So, what do you do if you're an alcoholic? Well, you know the drill. What do you hear? Get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor, the guy who gave me the pamphlet. He had also given me his phone number, and I called him and went back to that meeting and talked with him a little bit. And he was very, very helpful to me. What had happened was I had fallen in by complete accident into a hotbed of AA enthusiasm. These people were alive for AA. His sponsor was a doer and shaker. He was a kind of a doer and shaker. And the group that I fell into, I've never seen anything. In all the years that I've been going to AA, I've never seen a group more active than this group called the Big A. See, I've got their 23rd anniversary t-shirt on, the Big A. It had started in Alexandria, Kentucky. That's what the A stands for, with six people. The night that I got there, after 4 or 5 years, there were, I don't know, 75 or 80. And bus and care units would come there to it. Big time. And very early on, I got to see what good, active AA is all about. I got to understand the meaning of fellowship. They took me on 12-step calls. You know, I was 3 weeks sober and took me on a 12-step call to the, you know, another guy took me to the jail meeting down in LaGrange, Kentucky, the big penitentiary. And that was terrifying, you know. It was, any excuse to have fun. And the logic is there in the book. The logic says, you know, if you don't enjoy your sobriety, what's going to happen? You know, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. This is not a veil of tears. And the way they looked at it was, okay, if we can't have fun anymore with our drinking, otherwise we wouldn't come to AA. You're still having a lot of fun. You don't come to AA. So why don't we try having fun without drinking? And so there was an unending mixture of activities. You know, before you go to the meeting, you go to dinner with somebody and have dinner with them. Then you go to the meeting, and then you go to the meeting after the meeting at a local restaurant until the local restaurant gets tired of you and kicks you out. And then you go to another local restaurant. And that's what I discovered for the first couple of years in AA. Pig roasts. Any excuse. The central office needs money. Let's have a chili cook-off. Everybody have to pay an entrance fee, and we'll charge and we'll feed everybody that'll come with all of this chili or the hamburgers or whatever the heck it is, the fried chicken. It didn't matter. And the money would go to the central office. When I got sober, they needed another clubhouse in the area. They didn't have a really big clubhouse in Northern Kentucky. They had one across the river in Cincinnati. So I was immediately tucked into a committee to create a new clubhouse. I mean, it's just, there's no end to it. There'd never been a convention in Northern Kentucky, so they had put in a bid, and so I got put on the host committee for the first convention in Northern Kentucky. It still goes on, as far as I know. All of these things showed me that it's possible to have a good time in sobriety. And I had a better time in sobriety than some of the best times that I'd had drinking. And so I kind of adopted that, you know, this is a good deal. It is a good deal. It's a better than what I had. I've been divorced in sobriety. The wife that had helped me so much, our problems were deeper than just my drinking. We had marital issues and marital problems. And after 8 or 9 years of sobriety, I was back contemplating the pistol or drinking again. And that's dumb. That wasn't the problem. The problem was I was unhappy in my sobriety. And try as I might with all the 12 steps and various other 12-step programs that the various counselors that we had continued to see would recommend and suggest. And so, you know, after a long-term marriage, I get divorced, and how it came about is kind of weird because I had been asking God to help me, tell me what I needed to do, and instead I got something entirely different and much better. Instead of asking God to tell me what I needed to do, God said, in effect, and this was a strange 2-hour interval when I was struggling to make a decision about what to do with my life, marriage, and all of that. And I got this nice little two-hour, I can't call it a feeling. It wasn't a feeling. It wasn't, I didn't hear voices. It wasn't anything. But it was just a kind of a strange sensation that something was different. It lasted for about 2 hours. And at the end of it, I had a couple of images. One was sort of like that old Allstate image, you know, you're in good hands. I felt like I had hands like that. There was a weird image of like paper doll cutouts, one big, one middle, one small. And they were all joined hands, and it was like, you know, what is this kind of thing? And most important of all, it was, I wasn't told what I could do or should do or anything like that. It was just, I could do whatever I wanted and I would be okay. I could stay sober. That's all I needed, is I could stay sober. And since then, I've stayed sober. So, you know, I did goofy things, you know. It's funny looking at the growth of the web. I discovered the web and discovered something called AOL, Love at AOL, which when I first discovered it was called NetGirl, and it was divided into North, South, East, and West. It was bizarre. There weren't more than 300 or 400 people on it. But I met some woman up in Maine, and we hooked up, and I flew a 1,000 miles to meet a woman I'd never seen. I'd never seen a picture of her or anything like that. And often I hear people, you know, tell stories about doing shit like that, but that's what I did. And I did all sorts of things that it's impossible to explain that I never would have done. I just changed. So I like the person I am now more than the person that I used to be, because I really was not happy with the me that I was. I can't explain any of this except to say that the one constant in all of this is Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter where I've gone, and I've lived in a lot of different places, AA has been the prime focus for me. My primary purpose is to stay sober and to try to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. I don't know of any other purpose that I have in life. I have a daughter, a granddaughter, a grandchild, a spouse. I try to be a responsible husband and father and grandfather and great-grandfather and husband, you know, all of that stuff. I try to do the best that I can. That's all I can do. I follow the dictates of the inner compass. And the inner compass has pretty much been shaped by Alcoholics Anonymous. I remarried after 5 years of sporting around. And the woman I married is a traveling consultant. She wasn't when I married her, but that's what she became after a couple of years. She's a good example of God relieved her of a job she didn't like and was having a hard time with. And it did for her what she couldn't do for herself, and she ended up getting this wonderful job as a traveling consultant. And so for 11 years, I traveled most of the time with her for long stays. Places like Seattle, a year there, Bermuda, in 2 or 3 weeks since in Bermuda, here and there. Montreal, you know, and it was a good life, and I enjoyed it. The great thing is that I got to see AA in a lot of different places, big cities and small towns. It's always AA, and it's always been available, and although you can see lots of differences and colors of chips and stuff like that, formats of meetings, really, Alcoholics Anonymous is just a good deal for somebody like me. Other people don't find it so enticing. I very early on observed what happens to people who are not happy in sobriety. Fellow in the group that I attended would sit across the table from me, and literally, you could almost see him white knuckling the table. He hated it so much. And he decided to go out on a tube, and he went to Las Vegas, and he didn't leave. That was the first one that I saw. Early on in sobriety, I think about 3 months sober, I heard about an accident. Some of you may have heard of it, where a fella got on the wrong way, drunk, and hit a school bus or church school bus filled with kids and adults coming back from kind of event, and 26 people died, burned to death. He didn't. And of course, he didn't think he was alcoholic. It was the mixed drink someone had given him. If he had stuck to beer, he claimed he would have been fine. Those things made a big impression. The other big impression was when my first sponsor's wife died. She was sober, and I would call her. He was out of town. She would talk me down, help me, hold my hand, listen to me, and then talk me into going to a meeting, another meeting. And after about 3.5-4 years of sobriety, she decided to go back to drinking. And she died drinking windshield washer salt. These kinds of things make impressions, and they are impressions that are terrible because they're so unnecessary. We have a program that'll help us to stay sober if we'll take the steps, if we'll go to the meetings, if we'll get a sponsor, if we'll pray. I hear these bizarre arguments and discussions about God. How silly. Nobody knows what God's like. Nobody really knows. That's an undiscovered country. Nobody's ever come back from there. So why argue about the gender of God, or whether it's a Christian God or a Muslim God or a Jewish God or something like that? What good does that do? There is one, as I was told very early on, and I'm not it. And in fact, the first book ever written about Alcoholics Anonymous from an academic perspective where you had real research is titled Not God. And Ernie Kurtz titled it that because he couldn't find anything else that ran through all of the alcoholics that he interviewed in terms of what they were, what they thought, what they believed, or what they did. The only thing that we really can completely agree on was that we were not God. I am not God. There is something out there, and I've experienced it, and I've explained it to you, and you don't have a clue as to what the hell I'm talking about, because I can't explain it, and I can't describe it in any way that makes any sense. But I do know that it happened, and it happened to me. And I've been sober ever since. And as long as I continue to do what I have been doing, I'll probably stay sober. Doesn't mean that everything's tra-la-la wonderful. You know, I've been divorced. I've had financial issues. I've had health issues, you know. Feasible. So what? I've moved over and over and over in sobriety. But Alcoholics Anonymous is a constant. It's a constant. So, you know, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless us and keep us until then. And that's all.
Great, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Very good. It's great.
In the announcements, I said, well, you know, there's going to be some wisdom shared tonight, and I was going to learn something. You proved me right. Thank you very much. Great story. That was real AA.
what it's been walking for. So that hill got flat and now I won't have to fight it no more. Somehow, someway, I'll win my fight someday. And we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway.